dinosaurs still indeed do roam the earth. And in this case, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to e-commerce.
Welcome to the B2B Breakthrough Podcast. We're here to bring you all the best knowledge, insights, and strategies from e-commerce experts, successful business owners, and the team at Alibaba.com that you'll need to grow your business and achieve your next big breakthrough. I'm your host, Sharon Guy. That was Mark Rohan, a renowned expert in B2B e-commerce and market research. As the Senior Vice President of B2B and Market Research at Digital Commerce 360, Mark's work shapes the landscape of online retail through in-depth trend analysis and strategic insights. Holding a master's degree in journalism from American University, he expertly blends journalistic rigor with market foresight, making him a key figure in the evolution of B2B marketplaces globally. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. If you can just share a bit about your background or how you got into it, because most people, when they graduate, I'm sure they're not saying, hey, I want to go into the line of work of B2B e-commerce marketplaces. So how did you wind up here?
I've been absent a very long, long time, but I like to kind of open these kinds of discussions with my stock line, which is dinosaurs still indeed do roam the earth. And in this case, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to e-commerce. So to answer your question, we go where our readers take us. And back in 1998, we were the biggest publisher of banking information and banking periodicals in the U.S. And we were covering debit cards and credit cards and point of sale very closely through a variety of publications. And then we began getting a lot of feedback from advertisers and readers saying, what is this thing called e-commerce? It was just beginning to show its head back in 1997, 1998. And everybody who wants to be an e-commerce merchant, of course, has to have a merchant banking account. So there was this flood of interest from the marketplace and financial services to know more about what is this critter called e-commerce. So we crossed over. And that's how we launched a lot of the publications that we've done over the years, which is we follow our readers into an area they're curious about, and then do journalistic excellence in exploring the content, the issues, the market drivers, how big the market is, where it's going. That's kind of what we do for a living at DC360. But in 1998, that was just the start of online retailing. And so we began talking to catalogers back in the day. We began talking to retail store merchants, and we began talking to this new group of merchants called Web Only. Back in the day, they went not by e-tail, but by web only. And there was this critter called Amazon.
Oh, wait. E-tail? You mean the conference organizing company?
No. E-tailing is a common term for online retail, kind of a shortened version.
Okay. The 1999 version of that.
So back then, there was interest in this new channel. And we began going out and talking to retailers big and small across the board to see if this thing was real or not. And we found it was very real. So there was enough interest there that we decided to put together a publishing franchise, beginning with a magazine called Internet Retail, that would go in and explain to this new market and existing markets like bankers, what is this thing called e-commerce? And so we've been at that, and I've been at that since 1998. So I have seen the entire spectrum of business to consumer e-commerce emerge. And then for 15 years, I head up our research division. I rank 6,000 retailers across the world, including the top 2,000 in North America on their web sales, conversion rate, and site traffic. So we shrank the world of e-commerce pretty well, and we still cover it to this day. But on the flip side, my colleague Paul Demery and I also began reporting on B2B e-commerce way back in 2001. There was this thing called the dot-com crash. And back in 2000 was the initial genesis for B2B marketplaces. So we have been writing about B2B marketplaces for all those years, and we've scaled it from there. So because I've been at this so long, I know the market from the beginning until now, and that makes me kind of an interesting guy to talk to because we're just journalists. We talk to people all day long, and we do stories and reports and research papers on what the market tells us. So we cover a lot of ground, and we see a lot of things.
Take me back to 1998. What did the internet even look like? I mean, those were the beginning days of Google, if Google even registered as a website. If you're reporting into work, I'm assuming you're not opening up a computer. Or if you are and you're opening up the internet, what are you seeing?
You didn't shop at work back then. It was a very slow dial-up world, very primitive, but there was a website. And you basically had three things. You had rudimentary products, a very brief description, We had a relatively ancient site search engine and checkout, 1, 2, and 3. And that's when Amazon began with books. And then 1-800-Flowers was an early competitor there. You could buy flowers, if you will. JCPenney was one of the earliest persons ever to do anything just because they wanted to sell Beanie Babies. They had excess Beanie Babies to sell. That began their billion-dollar e-commerce operation today was selling baby beanies by modem. But you had all kinds of different equations of selling basically low volume, lower ticket, easy things to ship like books. That was the genesis of online retailing. And it was very primitive, but it got people off the map. And by the time 1998 came along, we launched Internet Retailer. Amazon was 3 years old, but they were only in business literally 1 year for 97 and only overseas the following year. So it was very early on. But even that early on, you began to see that what that brought to people was the convenience factor of shopping when they wanted to, from home, for what they wanted. And it all began from there.
What was the first thing that you bought online?
It was probably a book from Amazon. I think a lot of us did way back when.
Was eBay pretty big back then as well? Were they head-to-head competitors?
At the time, eBay was a lot bigger than Amazon because eBay began around 1995. And because they were the original marketplace for this stuff, it was kind of this electronic flea market. It's how people would look at it back in the day. Maybe eBay might not agree with that, but that's pretty much the way that the world saw it, I think. But what eBay did earlier on was they began selling things to a business audience much, much sooner than anybody else, beginning with autos for one, auto parts for two. So it was still dial-up. It was still primitive. It was still slow. That's where it all began.
So eBay, Amazon were more of the B2C players. And then when did the first B2B marketplace that you reported on came to be?
It was well ahead of their time. In about 2000, you have something called the dot-com crash, and it was terrible. But the run-up to the dot-com crash was glorious because this thing called e-commerce morphed into hype and VCs began throwing money at it left and right. And there were startup brands that had so much money that they didn't know what to do, so they would put on a golf tournament. And that's how much money was flowing into it. But it was all smoke and mirrors. So B2B marketplaces were getting initially a lot of play among industries like healthcare and aerospace and steel and automotive. And what industry coalitions tried to do is to bring together, for a certain industry, concentrated groups of buyers and sellers and use this thing called the internet to facilitate easier transactions between buyers and sellers. So the concept was sound, but it was 25 years before its time. So you had marketplaces that big companies put together. Boeing did, Chrysler, General Motors, Ford. They came together for auto supplies, which is still around, by the way. Healthcare big names did it. But there were all these great efforts, and then it was an idea ahead of its time. So it quietly folded, crashed, and the money went away. But out of those ashes, over the next 20 years, you had about 75 to 100 B2B marketplaces. I'm talking 2001 until about 2015, 16. You had maybe 100 marketplaces that had brought together enough buyers and sellers to begin to build synergy across an industry, and they made it. So there are early remnants of these marketplaces from 2000 that are still around. Healthcare and automotive are two prime examples, if you will. But for the most part, these B2B marketplaces were growing along as B2B e-commerce began growing. And then more importantly, e-commerce technology gets faster and faster every 2 or 3 years. And that began to bring together more of the infrastructure that now enables marketplace to happen. So that was what, a 15-year gestation period. And then things really exploded.
I've read a lot about eWorld Trade as well as DHgate. What are your thoughts on those companies?
In the marketplace world, the term B2B marketplace is just a generic term. Just like B2B commerce is just a generic term. What you're talking about here is basically using e-commerce technology and the internet to bring together diverse groups of buyers and sellers within the confines of what they do. So there can be as many as 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 different models of buyers and seller groups across industries, sub-industries, vertical industries that are kind of akin to one another, like steel and coal type of thing. But how they interact with one another over the internet using e-commerce technology is very unique to their user group of buyers and sellers. So my point to you is how a B2B marketplace looks and feels in steel is awfully different than how it looks and feels and does in healthcare or any other segment of the economy you want to think of here. So you've got commercial platforms like Alibaba and eBay and Amazon Business and a few others that are a little more mainstream, if you will. But some of the companies you're talking about is they tend to service specific niches like logistics or services or any other vertical market you can possibly think of.
Speaking of more niche or specific B2B marketplaces, do you think the trend is more going towards these more specific vertically integrated marketplaces, or are the more commercial ones dominating right now and to the future?
Let me kind of step back and talk about just a second here, the macro version of this. So I get asked this quite a bit, which is how big is the B2B marketplace world? And the answer is that it's the fastest growing e-commerce channel I have ever seen covering e-commerce since 1998. I have never seen anything morph as quickly as B2B e-commerce marketplaces. So in context, just 5 years ago, and we rank these, by the way, we count them up and write about them on a continual basis. There's only 75 of them. Then there was 250. Last year, I counted 500. Next year, I'm going to count 750. And in 2 years, my projection, at least 1,000. Because B2B marketplaces were probably the fastest growing e-commerce channel coming out of the COVID lockdown. When traditional buying channels for businesses shut down because COVID shut us all down, the one thing that didn't shut down was the internet. So all of this buying of what there was of it shifted to more the web. And as companies began looking for newer and better places to source products locally versus overseas, they began to discover this thing called B2B marketplaces. And volume took off and use took off. And the user groups of these marketplaces coalitions are younger, more digitally driven business buying teams that prefer to source what they buy for their organization from a lot of places and not just one. And all of this morphed into B2B marketplaces becoming the fastest growing segment of B2B commerce. They account for just under 1.3% of total B2B sales. So that's roughly maybe a $300 billion market if you think about it, which is chump change when you think of how big B2B spending is in the U.S., $18 trillion. But if you look at the perspective here, 5 years ago, 75, next year, 1,000, more to come, it's the Wild West. There's all kinds of models being formed, coalitions coming together, and some will make it, some will not. But all this activity is morphing into the fact that it's now a mainstream, game-changing U.S. business channel that's going to do nothing but grow.
So if you were a founder today, you would advise this founder to start a B2B marketplace as opposed to a B2C one if this person wanted to do a marketplace endeavor?
That is as individual as your business is. I mean, it's very common these days for a lot of companies to have both B2C and B2B, but they're different buyers. Business buying requirements are much different for wholesalers and distribution companies than they are for consumers. There's a lot of companies out there wrestling with what they call their marketplace strategy. They're not quite sure where to play. And one nice thing Alibaba has done is they made it very easy for small to mid-sized U.S. merchants to use a variety of tools, very sophisticated tools, to reach a global audience and scale quickly. And we've written about a lot of success stories from Alibaba that have done that. So the more solution that's tailored to what your business wants to do, both in B2C and B2B, that's how you make your decision.
We read in some of your articles that your research highlights that over half of B2B buyers are making purchases at least daily. Do you know what's driving this?
The entire B2B buying audience changed over COVID. I'm 66 years old. Guys like me are retiring. The old line professionals, the old line procurement managers, they tended to be more of an email, branch, fax, face-to-face kind of thing. That's all gone. What's replacing those workers who are retiring? And Forrester has research, I've got research, eMarketer has research. Today's B2B buyer is a younger business buying team of anywhere from 1 to 5 people, and they like self-service e-commerce. They want to do more on their own, and they want more of the tools from these marketplaces to kind of help them accomplish what they want to buy in the quantity and the features they want to support making a purchase from an organization. So the complete demographic of who's buying online for business organizations has changed. And one of the places they like to go to most is a B2B marketplace. The reason they go there is because instead of going one-on-one, you've got an entire market here. So you're looking to buy widgets for your organization. Here's a marketplace, multiple sellers for you. and multiple tools to deal with multiple sellers. So it's the critical mass that was not there 25 years ago that is there now. And that's spurring more business buying teams to go to marketplaces to get what they want for their organization, no matter the size, by the way, big, small, otherwise.
If you look at more in depth, this procurement manager that you say, you know, used to be older and now they're younger, is there a certain pattern in terms of where certain industries that are using these B2B marketplaces than others? Or what are some of the characteristics and traits of these procurement managers?
Let's do a little persona work here. So for starters, typically it's not one person. Typically it's a business buying team that's integrated across various channels at the organization. So the procurement team is anywhere from 3 to 5 people, sometimes as many as 10. And on average, they will do their due diligence on the people they may want to buy from for over a month. They vet you. And in the end, they take a month at least to figure out if they're going to do business with you for the first time. And then they will go to an average of 3.5 sites before they make their buying decision. And then it's just your first at bat with a B2B marketplace buyer, this team of professionals, if you will. And what they want is a very high user experience that makes it fast, makes it easy, makes it all the way through with anything from transparency and last mile logistics to order management capability to sourcing to financing, you name it. They want one-stop shopping, and it doesn't matter how complex that particular buyer is, whether you're buying an airplane part, which can be kind of very complex and very paper-driven, by the way, something even more complex, it doesn't really matter. These new B2B buyers on these marketplaces, they're grounded in what we learned at home. You know, we're used to going online and one-day delivery, two-day delivery, same-day delivery. So we're all on the business side, mired in what we do at home. And so these B2B buyers, what they want as these buying teams is the ease, the convenience, the sophistication, the complexity, the tool set they need to order products and services for their business as quickly, as efficiently, as easily as possible. So to bring it all home, what these guys want and what the B2B marketplaces do is make their job easier to do. Simple as that.
Which marketplaces do you see as succeeding? Like, which marketplaces are doing their job well in making their product easier for these users?
It depends. I mean, as I mentioned, it's hard to kind of generalize when there's one-stop shopping. But I mean, if you look at what Alibaba and Amazon Business are doing, it's very successful. And why is that? Because these are marketplace companies that have been around for quite some time. They know who their audience is. And more importantly, they can bring together the user experience, the tool set, and the critical mass to make it easy and convenient and worthwhile for a company to do e-commerce, if you will. So when I was at the Alibaba user group meeting in North America for the first time last September, Alibaba came out with a suite of new tools for their buyer audience, if you will, their seller audience. And I was amazed at how well thought out these new tools were. There is one tool in particular that made sourcing for a small shop or a small individual, entirely easy. So finding manufacturers, especially across the world, or even in China, to kind of source your product can be very difficult. They put together this tool that's intuitive, easy to use, and I think at last count could line you up with more than 200,000 manufacturers for your product needs. So my point to you is that's the kind of complexity made simple by marketplaces.
I recently watched the movie Bezos. It was like a biopic on him. There's this really famous scene where he always repeats this. It's whatever meeting your team is conducting, save an empty seat because that seat is supposed to be for your customer. And so echoing your point, they are always thinking in the shoes of their customer. But if you compare these two, do you see a pattern as to maybe a certain type of buyer will go to Alibaba.com first versus Amazon Business? Or do you think most procurement managers are always visiting a variety of these marketplaces before they're even sending out a lot of bids within each one?
The latter, because one of the things that companies are spending a lot of time doing these days is they're coming around the fact that these B2B marketplaces have value to them. But what you got to figure out is there is not one size fits all. Where a lot of companies, big, small, otherwise, are wrestling, which is, what is their marketplace strategy? Is there more than one? Are there numerous ones that we should be using for our organization? And it's not easy to determine because if you're a multinational enterprise, then the buying needs of your team in China might be different from the buying needs for your team in North America from Latin America versus Europe. Or one business line may have different requirements and procurement needs from another business line. So there is no one size fits all. The challenge here is figuring out how to put together a marketplace strategy that is right for the organization. And that could be one, that could be many. But in the end, what you want to look at is how does the B2B marketplace facilitate making my procurement job easier for the organization?
Are there any future predictions that you would have for B2B marketplaces? Where do you think it'll go?
To answer your question, I'll say once again what I just kind of reiterate, which is I have never seen a faster moving, faster growing e-commerce channel in all my years of covering e-commerce than I have for B2B marketplaces. They will do nothing but become even more mainstream. Just like ordering from a distribution company is just a standard answer today, within the next 4 or 5 years, what you may see in some markets is that B2B marketplaces may begin to kind of put distribution companies out of business because those business models are merging and merging very quickly. And the advantage that the marketplace has over the traditional distributor is a distributor is one-on-one. A marketplace brings together industries or coalitions of industries. So the features and functions are there, but the audience of buyers and sellers creates much more critical mass. And that's going to be very attractive to organizations looking to procure goods and services.
What is the get big concept that you've written about in your previous articles?
I think it's as simple as B2B buyers taking B2B sellers where the buyers want to be. And what that winds up to be is they want simple, clean, easy, efficient, transparent e-commerce transaction pricing, sourcing, and transparency. It's as simple as that. And the buyers are very demanding. They will look at a particular e-commerce site for at least a month before even deciding if they want to give them a try for commerce for the first time. And brand reputation, by the way, has a lot to do with that. But if that buyer finds that seller wanting, you're not going to get them back. So what B2B sellers are wrestling with is trying to come up with the strategy, the technology, the resources to kind of put together what they know their customers want because they've heard it for 2-3 years now, a better user experience. For a lot of companies, easier said than done.
If I'm a B2B marketplace myself, what are things that I can do to get new users?
Take the pain out of the process. And a lot of companies are doing that. The B2B marketplaces that are successful are adding on the features, the functions to make even buying complex organizational materials, products and services much easier, faster, transformational, and transparent than ever before. That's what the better B2B marketplaces are doing. And those that are doing it well are going to succeed.
Do you see a lot of procurement managers these days preferring to have suppliers local here in the U.S.?
It's becoming more of a trend than it was, but it's hard to generalize with all of this because there's no one-size-fits-all. Because one of the things that Alibaba will tell you and show you and does very, very well is they bring you the feature set and the functionality to sell to a global audience. So they're giving the U.S. small B2B merchants access to a marketplace that takes them global. It's a good business equation.
What are some of the biggest mythbusters you've encountered when discussing B2B e-commerce data and trends?
Some mythbusters is basically where a lot of companies in B2B e-commerce are still challenged today is they have no idea what they want to be when they grow up. So they think of e-commerce as a technology and not as a business strategy. Or they see technology as the be-all to end-all to be successful in e-commerce. It's just the opposite. So where a lot of companies are struggling these days is there has never been a faster growing channel than e-commerce in general. Just hasn't been. So that's not new. That's been decades in the making, if you will. But the fact of the matter is, it's much more mainstream now than ever has been before. And it's going to do nothing but accelerate. There was a sea change that happened during COVID, old news. The new news is that the B2B buyers are very sophisticated these days. They know what they want. They know what they want. They know how they want to get it. All they want to know from who they want to buy from is, do you have what I want, how I want it, when I want it, and the tools to make this happen via my e-commerce demands. That is not an easy fix for sellers. And so where sellers are struggling with is not so much the technology is there, but it's how do you put together the strategy that's right for your organization? And that's where a lot of companies, especially a lot of manufacturing companies, are still figuring things out. But so fast moving these days that the opportunity will not always be there. In fact, it's so cutthroat sometimes that if you lose market share, you've kind of lost and you've lost permanently. So big stakes here.
Earlier, when you were talking about how healthcare companies are also setting up B2B marketplaces, can you give an example of one that you've seen and what it looks like?
If you've worked in healthcare, it's not an easy market. I like to use the word healthcare as a market unto itself. So healthcare is very regulated, and it's a very small world compared to a lot of other parts of the U.S. economy. So it's insular. Healthcare is healthcare. And there are a lot of graves in the boneyard of companies that have tried to attack healthcare, poured a lot of money into it, and never quite understood it because it's healthcare. And so healthcare for many, many years was a lot of the biggest healthcare enterprise chains. Take the biggest hospitals in New York, Chicago, anybody. There's 25, 26 enterprise chains, if you will. And the world of vendors, they would deal with supply at the hospitals, anything from complex gear to replacing toilet paper or what have you, was known to a world that was rather small. The Medlines, the Medtronics, those kinds of companies, if you will. What changed, though, was that when COVID came along and healthcare reached an epidemic, of course, around the world and here in the U.S., what healthcare chains did for the very first time was to take a look at where can they source products because they can't find them anyplace else outside of traditional supply chain partnerships. So there's a lot more transparency with healthcare marketplaces these days where healthcare enterprises, the provider crowd, if you will, are going to new groups of coalition buyers in the marketplace to find what they want for their healthcare facilities. That wasn't around just 4 or 5 years ago, but that just kind of shows you one example of how fast one traditional supply chain industry has changed and adopted a marketplace mindset.
Right now, what a lot of people are talking about is the advent of AI or the injection of AI into everything and anything. What has B2B marketplaces done with AI so far?
AI is quite the buzzword, of course, no matter where you go, including here in e-commerce. But, you know, think about it this way. AI is not new. In fact, it's rather old. You talk to a chat box, been around for 20 years, that's AI. That's nothing but machine learning, very simplistic here. So the first wave of where you're seeing AI roll across the B2B landscape, including marketplaces, is where you think it would be. Marketing, merchandising, personalization, some supply chain analytics work on the back end, if you will. But where it's going is that in the next 6 months to a year, what you will see more marketplaces do, they're developing more specific applications to use machine learning and AI to facilitate faster product sourcing, faster transaction processing, faster insight into last mile logistics. That's where you're going to see more of AI emerge in the next year and less so with the personalization, marketing, merchandising venue that's kind of wave one here.
What do you think is one thing that leaders in the B2B e-commerce industry should start doing today to stay competitive?
The biggest pain point that sellers have is not giving the buyers what they want. And here it is. B2B buyers will use anywhere from 1 to 3 to 10 different channels to buy from a seller. 1 to 10. And on the average, it's 3 to 5. That could be a branch operation. That could be e-procurement. That could be EDI. That could be e-commerce. That could be one of 7 more different channels, if you will. My point is, B2B buyers today do business with companies across multiple channels and not just one. And what's changed here is that all of these channels are being integrated in what the B2B buyer wants, which is the old omni-channel shopping experience. I had talked about kind of our grounding as consumers before. What B2B buyers want, and across the marketplace too, is they want one-stop shopping across all the channels. So if it begins an e-commerce transaction, ends as punch out, so what? I don't care. Just make sure it gets done. Or what began as an e-commerce transaction, placing a recurring order, but becomes EDI by payment and processing. So what? Not my problem. That's what I want. The problem for sellers is they are struggling with how do you integrate all these digitally driven channels that could be 1, 3, 5, or 10. That's where a lot of complexity is coming into play and a lot of opportunity comes into play and a lot of winning and losing comes into play because the buyers, what they want is digital integration across the channels they use. For the sellers, it's not as easy to kind of meet what those buyers want. And that's the big crux of what's happening with challenges for the entire B2B marketplace industry these days, as well as e-commerce in general. It's not an easy nut to crack.
If you were to start a B2B marketplace, what do you think that would look like?
I'm having too much fun covering this stuff, so I wouldn't know.
Well, that's why I would think you would be the perfect person to ask, because you've seen every little, small, niche, not niche, commercial type of marketplace there is.
Well, my final word would be this, which is the term B2B marketplace, once again, is a generic term. What's more accurate is that there are different platforms that bring together coalitions of buyers and sellers with unique requirements that are akin to their vertical market, their industry, their niche. And the success will be in whoever those sellers are that can meet those buyers within the confines of those user requirements. They're going to be the ones that succeed. So there's a lot of trial and error going on. I kind of call B2B marketplace development the Wild West. A lot of things being thrown against the wall to see if they're going to stick. Not all will, but many will. That's how e-commerce becomes mainstream. And that's what's happening with the future of marketplaces. So for folks like Alibaba, the future is pretty bright. For some of these lesser marketplaces and key verticals where there's 12 others, have to wait and see.
Well, thanks so much for your time today and sharing your insights and your thoughts on the B2B e-commerce industry.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
B2B Breakthrough is produced by Alibaba.com. To find out how Alibaba.com is empowering its customers with the tools, services, and resources they need to grow their businesses, visit Alibaba.com. And then make sure to search for B2B Breakthrough Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Make sure to follow us so you don't miss future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Alibaba.com, thanks for listening.